Since the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, the more radical, violent offshoots of Islam have taken center stage in global politics, from Al-Qaeda to ISIS. While generating a backlash in the Western world, the popularity of violent messages has created conflicts within the Islamic world. Our next guest experienced this firsthand as he saw his children exposed to violent, hateful messages contrary to his own view of Islam.
Omar Saif Gabash has two sons. As he watched the aftermath of 9/11, he decided he wanted to share with his sons the kinds of questions they would have to face as they got older, so he wrote them a series of letters.
Omar Saif Gabash joins us now. He's ambassador of the United Arab Emirates to Russia. He's a founding trustee of the International Prize for Arabic Fiction in collaboration with the Man Booker Prize in London. His new book is called Letters to a Young Muslim. Ambassador Gabash, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
What led you to write this book, a collection of letters to your son?
Well, I think it was a realization that my older son was beginning to ask some quite fundamental questions, and it reminded me very much of what I had gone through at the same age. And it also reminded me that many of these questions still didn't have a sufficiently satisfying answer for me. So I spent a great deal of time thinking about these issues. I suppose, in a sense, the letters are not only to my son, but they're to my 15-year-old self as well. The primary reason is the continuing spread of radical and fundamentalist ideas that seem to be very much out of touch with the kinds of lives that we would like to be leading in the Arab world and more broadly in the Muslim community.
You encountered this in your own family. You were trying to inculcate messages in your kids. They were getting different messages from the culture, from their teachers.
Yes, and you know, this is something I think we've probably faced in all societies, that, you know, we're no longer completely, or we can no longer imagine that we're completely in control of our children's education. What they learn at school, what they learn online, the spread of ideas is something that we can't stop, but we can at least try to guide our children into evaluating ideas and to give them some kind of backbone, really. In pushing back at some ideas. So the problem, of course, is also that, you know, the teacher has a certain kind of authority, and we're encouraged to give them that authority. And yet, in some cases, I'm not going to say in all cases, but in some cases, teachers will go slightly beyond their role and spread ideas that are not particularly helpful.
And so your son came home saying that he was learning to hate other people, particular groups of people, Jews, Shia Muslims, and others.
Yes, it was quite a surprising day. Surprising and not surprising, because, you know, going back about 30, 35 years, I'd been exposed to the same kind of thinking. You know, it's not that it's not kind of indoctrinated into children, but there's certainly a very strong strain out there that calls for a hatred of different groups, including the Jews. And I felt very strongly that this is completely unacceptable. You know, it was harder than I thought to try to extract this idea from my my younger son in this particular case, his mind. But, you know, I'm very glad that it happened, because it allowed me to begin to think much more seriously about it, and to think of my responsibility, not just to my son, but to other children out there. For them to be fed hatred of any sort, I think, is unacceptable.
In your letters, you spell out why these messages of hate, fundamental messages, radical messages, might be so appealing to a young Muslim, maybe to a young Muslim boy in particular. Looking through their eyes, what is the appeal of these messages?
Well, living life successfully and building happiness, I suppose, and achieving happiness in our daily lives is actually much more complex these days than it may have been 30 years ago, 40 years ago. There are so many conflicting demands on our attention. The appeal of a particular fundamentalist Islam is that it is very straightforward. It is you can learn it in a day. It gives you the power of God on your side. And it allows you to really to be empowered on his behalf, and it allows in certain cases, I would say that there is a theology of anger and frustration and hatred that is affected through this teaching. And I think that, you know, many people will say, well, you know, those are the traditions. But I actually think that these are choices that are either made for us or that we make ourselves, and we need to be aware of that choice. A theology of anger and hatred and frustration is a choice. It is a way of looking at the world, and we don't have to look at the world in those terms.
You write that it's not enough to say things like Muslims are religion, or Islam, I'm sorry, is a religion of peace. The people who resort to violence are not true Muslims. You say that that sounds simple and satisfying. It's not enough, though.
Well, you know, at some stage it might have been the correct response, a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to various accusations and perhaps to the rise of Islamophobia. But I think that it's time to move beyond the kind of platitude and the wishful thinking that Islam is a religion of peace. Yes, in theory it may be. But what we need to understand is that the theory of Islam is not enough. We actually need to practice it, and we need to express it. So if we see within our own community that kind of anger, frustration, and a negative kind of outlook, then we really need to make a stand, not even a public stand, but really a private stand amongst ourselves, and to ask ourselves more broadly, what is the purpose of violence? Why is there a certain attitude to violence which seems to be quite relaxed in certain communities, at least in the Middle East, as you can see. And we also need to think, I think, very clearly about the consequences of violence on our own societies in the long run. An act of violence that took place in my family against my father 40 years this year, has had repercussions across four decades. And not that I'm calling for sympathy here, but I am saying that if this is what I'm feeling, then we must think about the violence that has been committed in the name of Islam against fellow Muslims right across the Middle East and the Muslim world, and to ask, is this really worth the so-called benefits that we might gain through that violence? And my answer is absolutely not.
We're talking to Ambassador Omar Saif Gobash. His new book is Letters to a Young Muslim. And you close with a call for Muslims of all ages to be individuals, to think for themselves, to evaluate the tenets of Islam themselves rather than relying on the authority they run across on the internet, or that teacher, maybe even their parents.
Well, I'm not calling for a complete revolution at the level of the individual. What I am saying is that there has to be a kind of a rebalancing between the community and the individual. Because I think over the last sort of few decades, the community, the abstract community of Muslims, has now taken the lead to the detriment of the individual. And I think that the community of Muslims, our community, will be enriched when we return somewhat to the idea of the individual and the individual flourishing. It's easily misunderstood. So, for example, somebody sent me a message saying that, you know, this is a Western concept and we shouldn't be thinking in those terms. And I actually think that no, you know, I wake up in the morning and I am a single individual. There is no group there with me, if I can say. And so actually this is a human idea. And it is a development, I suppose, of our economies and our societies and the technologies that we have available. So the individual is the Muslim individual is coming whether we like it or not, and it's how we begin to think about ourselves and how our theologians begin to accommodate for a rising kind of opinion and debate taking place amongst the individual Muslims of the community.
You also write about how Muslims engage with a diverse world, whether it's Muslims of different backgrounds, different approaches to the faith, non-Muslims as well, and a choice between a wall between communities or trying to engage in a positive way. Do you see hope for a movement toward that more positive engagement?
I actually think that it's inevitable. When we realize actually that there are no walls anymore anyway, and that the fact that, you know, most radical Muslims in particular, but many Muslims are online, and we are all subject to, you know, kind of the globalization of entertainment and information. Ideas spread, with no clear identification as to religion or ethnic identity or ethnic source of these ideas. And so I think that there is a kind of intermingling of identity anyway. And so the idea of building a wall between ourselves and the outside world may have worked, in the age of the camel and the horse and maybe even the cart, but it doesn't work in the modern world where we travel all the time and we live in multicultural societies, even where we think we don't. So I think it's inevitable that we will come to a realization that there is no inside and outside, there is no friend and foe, that we are all mixing and sort of exchanging identities all the time.
In the West, there's sometimes the view that Islam is one thing and it's hostile to Western traditions. There's a clash of civilizations. A group like ISIS might agree 100% like that from the other side of things. In a way, they're working together to keep these battles going. How do people on either sides of that debate try not to let those messages win out?
Well, the messages are coming out, and they're coming out in quantity. What I think is that, increasingly my fellow Muslims are discovering that there is a silent majority that is trying to express its opposition to this aggression and this violence and this antipathy to the West. We are intrinsically related and connected to the West, whether it's economically, whether it's counting our money in dollars, or whether it's the technologies that we use to interact with each other and the entertainment that we enjoy. So I think that what I'm trying to do in this book is to put forward a basic kind of structure for a modern conversation about these issues amongst, I'd say, the silent majority. And hopefully they won't be so silent anymore, that we will be able to, in fact, perhaps absorb some of the frustrations of the radicals who think that they're on the right path but are sorely misguided. I think, I don't want to be sympathetic to the radicals, but there is certainly a number of people who would be attracted by a radical message if they didn't find that there was a constructive way with which we could engage with the world. And what I think is that's precisely what we're trying to do, which is give people within our community the tools to understand how we can mix how we can express the values of the Quran and the Prophet, which are basically the values of fairness and justice, how we can express that in the 21st century in a constructive manner.
You write that the radical violent message is loud, it's well-funded, it's simple for people to grasp and latch onto. Can you compete with that?
Yeah, I think we can. I think that, people will get tired of the death and destruction within a particular strain of Islam, and we will see a turning back from that. So I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic, primarily because I have faith in the resources, both sort of intellectual and moral resources of Islam.
Ambassador Gobash, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Omar Saif Gobash, ambassador of the United Arab Emirates to Russia, author of the new book, Letters to a Young Muslim.